Some of the things we're discussing, you might think, well, it really doesn't have much relevance to our lives. Doing all these things about philosophy, in the meantime, devotees are struggling with their day-to-day lives. It has relevance, maybe not immediately and directly, which is why these kind of things, they're not usually taken up by... It's not for the mass. Feedback shouldn't be on the floor. It's not for the mass. It'll never be for the masses, but it is important. It's very important, but individually we may find it's more important how I can settle my family affairs and all these kind of things. So there's a full spectrum of application in Krishna consciousness. Is it acceptable for new grihastha couples to take up a more renounced lifestyle, almost vanaprastha? Question from Bhishma Dev Das. New grihastha. Well, it'll be different strokes for different folks. In Varnashram, the culture of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and less than Shudras is quite different. Brahmanas lead a renounced life. They're expected, they're not sense enjoyers. But they're also, the Grihastha Ashram is distinct from Vanaprastha Ashram. Vanaprastha is also very renounced, but Brahmanas are also still, but they also, they're married, they have children. So, it's not the same as Vanaprastha life, in which when they're in, family responsibilities are largely left behind. Srila Prabhupada often quoted from Manu, Putrarte kriyate bharya. One accepts a wife for the sake of producing a son. So, son. And if there are sons, there may be daughters also. At least one son is required. Dharmaputra. Other ones, Manu said, well, for the sake of fulfilling dharma, one has to have at least one son. Others, they may be Kama Putra. You desire to have more sons. So it's also required to look after the children. So it's not exactly the same as being a Vanaprastha. Austere, yes. Detached, yes. But responsible also. Not, whereas a Vanaprastha, not irresponsible, he's responsibly using his family, his human form of life, but he doesn't, or he's withdrawn from the responsibility of day-to-day family affairs. So, there's an important difference. For family matters, it's probably better to ask senior grihastha devotees. But then again, you have to find someone who advises you in a way that reverberates with yourself, because different people may give different instructions. For instance, some will recommend just have one or two children. And actually Prabhupada, he also said that. Have one or two children and send them to the Gurukul, and then they agree. You can get on with preaching and this and that. But you can get on with more full-time service. But I tend to recommend, not that anyone's following it, to have more children. It's one way of making devotees. It may sound almost comical to say it like that, but that is the norm. Before the age of mass artificial contraception, people had many children. And Varnashram society, joint family, it's also labor-intensive agricultural family requires many children, actually. So, unless you're really fully into preaching. And women, generally, although in the modern age they're brought up differently, but they generally prefer to, they like to have more children. But it may be difficult because it's so expensive to have children. It's the money-based society. Once, it just came to my mind, I was in Malaysia once, where I was doing a house program somewhere in some village. They don't really have villages in Malaysia, it's rubber plantations. And just in the house opposite, there was a Muslim man with many children. He looked quite young, looked like he's capable of producing quite some more. So I asked him that, well, how do you obviously wasn't very well to do. How do you maintain so many children? He said, Allah looks after. That's all. They're going on. Let's try and put these in some order, the order that they came in. Srila Prabhupada said that his purports are expressions of his transcendental ecstasies. And he also said that his books will be law books for the next 10,000 years. It seems that in certain purports, rasa dominates tattva, while in others, tattva seems to dominate rasa. Could you give an example of that, Radhananda, as it's your question? There are certain things in Prabhupada's books which are clearly not meant to be taken seriously. It's generally not like that, but there is, for instance, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Sati was lucky that Lord Shiva didn't take her jewels and sell them to buy ganja. I'm paraphrasing here, because he said that the followers, the so-called followers of Lord Shiva, they smoke ganja. So he was, it's obviously some, it's a joke. So there are cases where it's not to be taken literally. Rare. Again, some people have seen that, and talking about Malaysia, someone saw that, they became upset because they took it literally. So, interpretation is required. Prabhupada didn't like that word interpretation. He used the word interpretation to mean just your own speculation, which is not in line with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, but elucidation, we could say, is required in many cases. It's always going to be. So, yeah. Can you give an example? Where tattva dominates rasa, where the presentation is mostly Prabhupada's purports, they present from the standpoint of tattva. Bhagavatam in the first three verses introduces that this is a treatise of tattva and of rasa, which is something new in the Puranas to give so much emphasis on rasa. But there's also rasa tattva. Rasa is not just Rasa itself is experienced, but there's also rasa tattva, which is to be delineated. So mostly Srila Prabhupada's purports, they present even rasa with tattva, with an understanding. And that's also, I just discussed this on Monday, on Radhashtami, how Bhagavatam gives rasa gyanam, tatrinvatam rasa gyanam, swadu, swadu, pade, pade. But there's always tattva, with even the rasalila, Parikshit, he asks for the sake of, he didn't need for himself, but there were so many people sitting there who weren't on his level, even though they were rishis and he's just a newly renounced grihastha. They were Brahmins and he's from Kshatriya class, but he was on a more advanced level. But for the benefit of them listening, he asked, how is it that Krishna, who comes to establish dharma, dance or associates with others' wives, and this appears to be adharma? And then Shukadev clarifies. Then you get on with the story. But then in Gita Govinda, it's just all story. And if you take it out of context of tattva, then it could just seem to be like a love story, a bit of a fantastic love story, because there are so many gopis and this and that. Jayadev begins by establishing what was sung this morning, Jaya, Keshava Dhritta Dashavit. This is the Supreme Lord. But he doesn't get into it. He just says at the beginning that it's the Jaya Jaya Deva Hare. He has two songs at the beginning, which praises Krishna as the Supreme Lord, doesn't get into a big discussion of it, and launches into the same narrative as is given in the five chapters of Bhagavatam describing Rasa Leela. But it's from the platform of simply relishing it. It's all rasa. Whereas the Bhagavatam has the same subject, but it's, you could say, tempered with tattva, with that understanding. So Prabhupada's books are very much like that. So if you say that rasa dominates in some... And also Jiva Goswami's disappearance day to day, because the works of Rupa Goswami describing the leelas of Vrindavan and of Dwaraka, and then the writings of Raghunath Das Goswami, and Jiva Goswami gave a philosophical basis to all of that. It's not just some imagination. Then? I didn't even finish reading the question. I stopped there because I got stuck. Yeah, but I often, when people are asking questions, I interrupt them. And they say, oh, interrupt, I didn't finish. But I say, I have to interrupt because you're going to make the question on the basis of a premise, but the premise is not clear. So that's why I stopped at this point. What is that? The rasa dominates in the purpose? But I don't understand this. Rasa dominates tattva in certain purports. Could you give any? Do you have any particular purport in mind? Srila Prabhupada doesn't comment much on that. There are sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's vision of Krishna, Radha and Krishna Leela, but Prabhupada, he doesn't comment on that much. But that section is very much open. There could be deep commentaries on that, for discussing all the rasa vichar in there, the discussion of the what's going on in the transcendental psychology of Radha and Krishna and how they're relishing, and what are the sanchari bhavs and vyabhichari bhavs and the anubhavs and all this kind of thing. But there's great scope for that, but Srila Prabhupada doesn't get into that. Nor have our recent acharyas. But there is great scope for that. There are many commentaries on Gita Govinda. And as I spoke about, practically the whole Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, his whole leela of relishing separation in the mood of Radharani is derived from, in terms of literary sources, is derived principally from Gita Govinda. Are you referring to in Krishna book where it speaks of after Yudhishthira Maharaj had finished his Rajasuya Yagya, then all the males and females, after his Avabrita bath, they were in the river and throwing water on each other, and then the water stuck to the women's bodies, and persons who were affected by material desires became lusty, but those who were pure did not. Is that what you're referring to? In the former case, when a reader fails to recognize that Srila Prabhupada is giving more importance to rasa over tattva in certain purpose. I don't get the... I'll read it all. I'll see if I pick up the thread. The Prabhupada is giving more importance to rasa over tattva in certain purports. There seems to be a risk that one might come to an incorrect philosophical conclusion. How should we avoid falling into this trap of deriving wrong philosophical conclusions from purports which are actually manifestations of Srila Prabhupada's transcendental ecstasies? I say that Srila Prabhupada is very careful to explain all the different leelas from a philosophical perspective. Otherwise, if you just read the Bhagavatam and you read the episode of Mohini Murti and Lord Shiva chasing after her, and what would you get if you didn't have the explanations? What would you derive from it? It might seem that there's some mundane lust, and so that's always required. It's always required to have a philosophical backup. Danger of misunderstanding, well, that's always there, isn't it? I just mentioned those sections in Chaitanya Charitamrita which describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feelings of ecstasy, relishing the leela of Radha and Krishna. When those books first came out, and some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they became very enthusiastic to concentrate on studying that to the exclusion of Gita philosophy. Srila Prabhupada became very, very upset. He said they shouldn't do this. Not qualified. And they said, well, it's only in your books, Prabhupada. And I said, yeah, but there's still this question of qualification to concentrate on certain sections of his books. So the danger of misunderstanding is always there. One has to be a fit candidate for hearing. If one is not fit, then he can't understand. I often cite this example. This is from many years ago. in England. I was trying to explain to someone, giving the example of the car and the driver, that the body is like the car and the soul is like the driver. And then he said, then the person I was speaking to, just some Karmi visitor, probably first time visitor, he said that, well, you're supposed to be monks, why do you have cars? Give the man some prasadam. Just can't get the point. I had some experience of that just a few days ago. That was exactly 1 week ago now. At this time, just a little in a college program, and then talking about love. Someone brought up the question of love. Actually, I spoke about love and how the highest principle is love. And then I said that, well, what you consider love is not love. And I spoke about how in Indian families, first you get married, and then in traditional families, they'd come to just by being together with this, the sense of responsibility comes first, and on the basis of that, the love develops. It's not that it's just love from sensual contact. I really walked into a minefield there. Then all this thing came, you know, feminism, and you can get married and divorce afterwards, and what does it matter? And I was trying to explain how the basis for this, of the whole civilization, is that self-realization is the purpose of life. But it was just impossible to make any philosophical progress. Once there was some idea that there should be some restriction and control in marriage, then just that was it. They were gone. They were gone on the emotional platform, which is it's very difficult to speak philosophy to people who they have no idea of any higher goal of life. We're talking about philosophy, presenting Krishna conscious philosophy in terms of Western philosophy, but ideas have consequences, and that's another philosophical discussion, linking cause and effect. There's this verse in Gita, this Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetu Madbhir Vinischitai. So Srila Prabhupada translates as that it's ascertained in terms of cause and effect, because it's another speculative philosophical question, which also comes up in Vedic philosophy. Is the cause in an effect? Is the effect in a cause? Is there such a thing as cause and effect? So all these questions go on. But we can practically see that what is the effect of Western philosophy? It's ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha. That's their whole society. And some people get philosophical about it. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. They have no higher goal of life. So it's very difficult to try to communicate these things to people who don't have a higher goal of... They have no idea beyond being animals. And I said to them, this culture, it's just the lowest. Didn't go down very well. Because they think our culture, American culture, we're the best. Bomb everyone if they don't agree with us. Now we've got drones. So you know, it's very advanced civilization. So... But that doesn't mean we should give up trying to give philosophy and just have some... They like rock music, so let's have some rock music. And Srila Prabhupada, he endeavored to communicate the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. It was amazing that he did so. Why did people take up what Prabhupada gave? Four regulative principles. You could say that well, Prabhupada, his dynamic personality and his ability to work with different people and the Hare Krishna mantra. But I would say the main, okay, you can bring many people to chant Hare Krishna by having kirtans and this and that, but the commitment, I would say that comes from the philosophy that Prabhupada taught. Not from the kirtan, you don't need any commitment to do kirtan. Actual kirtan means it's done by liberated souls, but to chant and dance, anyone can do that. And then nowadays in our movement, we seem to be wanting to do that more and more. Just have chanting and dancing, and it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether you're following or not following, and it's all love and peace. Getting back to the hippie style. Which is okay at Rath Yatras or beginning, but it's not supposed to be our whole movement. There's supposed to be some who come to a higher level of commitment. That commitment comes from a higher understanding and a higher ideal. So philosophy is required. And Prabhupada did that. If we see Prabhupada on the boat when he saw America, and his immediate impression, it wasn't, oh, America, it's so wonderful. His immediate impression is that the people here are completely in ignorance. They're covered by tamaguna. How can they be delivered? Then Shrinvatang, Swakata, Krishna, Punya, this all in his poem. Tada rajas tamo bhava raja kama raja. What is it? Raja kama raja. Chaita anita anayavidang stitang sattvam prasidati. So they can be purified by hearing the Bhagavatam. That's what he saw was the key. He thought himself ready to come to America when he had the first canto of Bhagavatam printed and brought it with him. Then he thought, now I'm ready to go. Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobha deyasci. Yeah, so this philosophy is required. It's very difficult to get through to people who have no idea. They're animals, just animals. I didn't say it, but these women who are getting upset with me, they're all in shorts, which is uncivilized. If I say that, if you say that in a college, just a meeting of college students in America, I don't know what they'd do to you. Say what? That women wearing shorts is uncivilized. To expose their legs like that. For people who think that this is civilization, that we have the freedom to do like this, and they think it's quite normal and proper and right that they have sex with whoever they want to, whenever they want to, however they want to, and they think that is civilization because we have the freedom to do so. So we're really... It really is a great challenge to bring people to a level of commitment. It's relatively easy to have kirtan and just people come and they do kirtan and then they go away and maybe throw a few colors on them and hari bol. But that is not going to bring them to a higher level of consciousness and of commitment and what is required to be Krishna conscious. Ado shadha tata sadhu, sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha means santa evasya chindanti manovya sangha mukti bihi. The sadhus will cut your mental attachments with their harsh words. And then anartha nivritti, bhajana kriya, that means disciplined life, structured life, and then anartha nivritti. So you can do kirtan, but Bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabutan na paye Krishna pade premadan. It's not just going to kirtan and just enjoying yourself and then go away. We had a great kirtan. We really enjoyed it. And even you say people, they become inspired to do some more service or some more chanting. Okay, that's better. But there's also the fact of one has to actually commit oneself. Now I feel inspired. Now I like to go to the temple and do some service. Okay, that's good. But that's the real commitment comes at the time of when one is committed to initiation. That is a major step. Dikha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. It means that, okay. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned this in one letter. He said, everyone can come and join kirtan. They're welcome. But there's a level of commitment, of initiation. Before that, there's no commitment. After that, you're supposed to be committed. And then you're supposed to go on higher and higher. So, it is very difficult to establish this, but unless we establish this, then we're just creating Prakriti Sahajiyas, actually. That's what happened in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya, because there were so many people saying, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy and don't bother with all this, and people to... I was in Bangladesh, every Hindu village, there's kirtan going on. When I first went there, there's kirtan going on. It's their culture, very nice culture, but everyone was eating fish also. You say, don't eat fish. They never heard of it. They had no idea that there's anything wrong with eating fish. And even there was one devotee, he was on I had a traveling Sankirtan party in West Bengal before I went to Bangladesh. And he was initiated by Jai Pitaka Maharaj. And I said to him, he was saying, oh, it's so good in Bengal, everyone's devotee. I said, yeah, but they're all eating fish also. He said, what's wrong with eating fish? He himself's initiated. He said, our guru, he's referring to his family guru, he had fish, he eats fish. We're all chanting Hare Krishna. You're just new. What do you know? But we're chanting Hare Krishna since our childhood. And everyone eats fish. What's wrong with it? Oh, they're all Vaishnavas. They didn't know, they couldn't imagine there's anything wrong with it. Guru himself eats fish. So who's going to tell all these things? If you look into the history, you can understand why Bhaktistan Saraswati was so heavy. What was considered Vaishnavism was deviant. And the same thing we have in ISKCON today, the same, I can see the pattern evolving, that don't criticize anyone, don't make Vaishnav aparad. And under the cover of that, you do all bogus things. Or it may not even be completely bogus, but it's not tivra bhakti. It's not the spirit of full surrender and full commitment. It's more, be nice, be good. And the most important thing is relationships. Well, in one sense that's true, but first the relationships are on the basis of surrender to Krishna. That's the big... And then relationship comes. Not that we, on the mental platform, we try to adjust our relationship. But it's very difficult in America today. This college program also, there was this girl, she stayed behind to try and deprogram me from all my misconceptions. And I was trying to speak to her in what you might call a philosophical manner, and said, oh, there's a disconnect between you and me. You're not touching my heart. Yeah. First of all, I have to touch her. This is this idea. First of all, you have to touch the heart of people, then you can preach to them. In other words, you have to get on the totally sentimental platform and massage their false ego. And then they'll listen to you. But actually they've never listened to anyone in their life. And they're not ready to listen to anyone. They're not willing to even make a show of listening to anyone unless it satisfies their ego. So they're not at all candidates for hearing any philosophy. So Prabhupada, he did kirtan and prasadam, and he gave lectures. And on, he'd give straight. You can listen to the lectures that Prabhupada gave. He, from the very beginning, he recorded them. And it's not that in the beginning he made the philosophy any less. He presented it simply, but he didn't make it any less, and there are no compromises. In kirtan, everyone is welcome. Everyone come for kirtan and prasadam. When he gave a lecture, it was same philosophy. Many people didn't stay, but those who did stay, they eventually took it up. And as I said, Prabhupada, he had to take some stern measures at some point of smashing the Mayavad. We're getting very, very heavy with Keith, Wally, and Howard, who later became Kirtanananda, Umapati, and Hayagriva. He got very, very heavy with them. Practically it has to be there, but you have to see how and when to introduce it. But it has to be there. This idea you simply be nice to people. When people are seriously diseased, simply to give them some placebo is not going to work. You need to give them chemotherapy is given for cancer, right? You don't give an aspirin. It's not going to work. So, it's all discussed in some detail in this book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. How we can't stop presenting the facts, even though people think it's an opinion. I saw one question here. What is your opinion? It opens. I don't even accept that kind of question because it's completely useless. As people always say, what's your opinion? It doesn't matter what my opinion is. I'm just a completely insignificant jiva floating in this material world. Your opinion. What does it matter what anyone's opinion is? What is the fact? What is reality? That we should try to ascertain. That all comes out of this relativism that any opinion is as good as any other, as Ramakrishna Paramahamsa so-called said, Jato Mat Tato Pa. But no, there is reality independent of what we consider it to be. There is objective reality. If you don't believe it, that's what I was saying to this girl. She said, well, suffering is quite good because then you can, because I was saying in this material world it's a place of suffering. She said, well, if you don't suffer, you don't enjoy. So I said, well, I'll bring a hammer and bang you on the head and then you can enjoy when I stop banging you on the head. It was a disconnect. I didn't appeal to her heart. But what am I supposed to say? Oh, that's a very good philosophy. It's not a good philosophy. It's completely nonsense. What do you do? Just for such people, give them prasad. But at some point, you're like Prabhupada with Keith, Wally, and Howard. At some point, you have to tell them, look, what you think. And you have a very, obviously Keith, Wally, and Howard had a very high opinion of their opinions. And they thought what Swamiji is saying is quite good, but actually they thought they knew better. And Prabhupada just at some point, he just smashed them. He got extremely heavy with them. It might not be the process in every setting, but if at all we're going to bring people into Krishna consciousness, we're going to have to give them the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which people mostly don't like, which is why we're in this material world. All philosophies except the actual Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, they're all sophisticated ways to avoid surrendering to Krishna or ignoring Krishna. Yeah.
So this question really came from an argument that can expression of transcendental ecstasies be considered as an absolute philosophical basis for the society?
Can expressions of transcendental ecstasies be considered a philosophical basis for our society?
An absolute philosophy.
But it's not a philosophy, is it? Expression of transcendental ecstasy is not a philosophy per se.
Like that's not the standard for society. This is what we should do.
I don't understand. How can you say it's a philosophy? If someone has ashta-sattvic bhav, they're perspiring, hair standing on end, and swooning, that's not a philosophy. Oh, I see. Oh, you're saying because it's Prabhupada's ecstasy that it's not philosophy, something like that? Well, one important point is that Tattva and Rasa are not mutually aloof from each other. They're absolutely interconnected. It's not that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is something dry and boring. It's absolutely connected with Rasa. They're different aspects of the same thing. It's not that Jiva Goswami, who's a gopi from the spiritual world, came down to the material world and became a dry philosopher. It's all ecstasy. Philosophy of Krishna consciousness is ecstatic. What is the time? 8:00. We're supposed to finish, right? So Prabhupada's ecstasy in presenting this was presenting Krishna to the world. That's his ecstasy. Deeply absorbed in Bhagavatam, which is Krishna. Generally, Vishwanath Chakravarti, many devotees think, well, he's just giving commentaries on the leelas and all this, but you see he's fully aware of all the philosophical nuances in the Bhagavatam. He also comments on the prayers of the personified Vedas, which is deeply philosophical. So it's not one-sided. It's all one package. Okay, we'll finish there for now. Hare Krishna. Hope to see you all tomorrow morning. 4:30. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.